It is great to see out there this morning, and it's great to worship together, isn't it? I know that so many states have seen a rise in COVID, and it's just something about being here in person that's just so much better. So y'all be safe, okay? Be safe, be smart, be okay, and that way you can be here next week, and we're good with that. We are going to be back in the book of Ruth. In the Old Testament, we're doing a sermon series on Ruth that we're calling the Journey of Naomi. And while you're turning there, I want to also remind you of one thing I didn't announce earlier, and that's during the month of October, it's known as Tackle Hunger Month here locally in Brownwood. And because what we do is we try and raise up all the food and things we need to give Christmas baskets and all that kind of stuff through Good Samaritan Ministries. So for the churches, they're asking the churches to bring sweet potato. But I had two interesting text conversations with people yesterday. And before you try and figure out who these people are, they both even live in different states, so you're not going to be able to figure it out. So don't try and figure this out. But it was two text conversations with people who were just kind of struggling right now. People that are just kind of, they're going, life isn't what it's supposed to be. Actually, one of them was about how life wasn't what they had planned and life wasn't what they had expected. Things have thrown them a curveball and things have kind of have not turned out the way they wanted. And they go, we're trying to figure out a way to deal with it. The other one was someone who's just getting overwhelmed by everything that's going on in their life. And there's the stress level is just beginning to go through the roof. And they go, I'm struggling with that. And how do I deal with that? Right? I think we could identify with both of those situations, can't we? We can identify when life just seems to get out of control. We can identify when life just seems to be so stressful that we go, I don't know what to do. And you just want to curl up in a fetal position and cry. Anyone been there this week? Yeah, you don't have to raise your hand, but probably a number of us in here have been there this week. You know, we've been going through this journey of Naomi that we started last week. And in the book of Ruth, where we left off last week, we've got Naomi. She's probably, you know, honestly, she's probably somewhere around the 50-year-old age, or even maybe even a little bit younger than that. We're not real sure. She is married to a man named Elimelech, and there's a famine. They live in Bethlehem, which means the house of bread. And ironically, the house of bread was going through a famine. So what they ended up doing was moving their family to Moab. The two of them, they packed up. They packed up their two sons, who were young at the time, and younger anyway, and they moved to Moab. And they were just planning on being there for a little while, just because there's food, there's rain, there's water. And while they were there, the two sons get married to Moabite women. And then Elimelech, he passes away, followed by the two sons passing away. And now you're left here with Naomi, who's recently widowed, who has two daughters who have both been, two daughters-in-laws, excuse me, who are both recently widowed. There's no children, there's no grandchildren here. It's just the three of them, and all three of them are widows. And all three of them don't know what to do, and all three of them just are so by what they've been through. They've been beat up by life, they've been beat up by everything that's going on. And I think, let's look at this here for a minute. We want to pick up in verse 6. So let's start reading in Ruth chapter 1, verse 6. And here's what it says. We're going to read all the way through verse 18. It says, she, talking about Naomi, and her daughters-in-law set out to return to the territory of Moab because she had heard in Moab that the Lord had paid attention to his people's need by providing them food. So she left the place where she had been living, accompanied by her two daughters-in-law, and traveled the road leading back to the land of Judah. Naomi said to them, each of you go back to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to the dead and to me. May the Lord grant each of you rest in the house of a new husband. She kissed them, and they wept loudly. They said to her, we insist on returning with you to your people. But Naomi replied, return home, my daughters. Why do you want to go with me? Am I able to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. Go on, for I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was hope for me to have a husband tonight and to bear sons, would you be willing to wait for them to grow up? Would you restrain yourselves from remarrying? No, my daughters, my life is much too bitter for you to share, because the Lord's hand is turned against me. And again, they wept loudly, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Naomi said, look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Follow your sister-in-law.
But Ruth replied, "Don't plead with me to abandon you or to return and not follow you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord punish me and do so severely if anything but death separates you and me." We're going to pause here. We're going to come back to verse 18 here in a minute. But it's a pretty incredible picture here. But I love verse 6 because you can really get a feeling for Naomi's mindset when you see in verse 6, there's two things that are mentioned there, that it says that the Lord paid attention to his people's need, because that's very much Naomi's attitude here. God has forgotten about us. God has just ignored us. But he noticed that people there were hungry. Did you kind of catch that? It's almost like God's going, "Oh, hey there. Hi. It's good to see you. I didn't know you were there. Well, now let me do something about it." I think that really says something about Naomi's mindset. The fact that she says that God's basically finally started paying attention. The other thing is notice she calls him because God has paid attention to his people. The Jewish people back in Judah, back in Bethlehem. You know why I find that telling? She's one of those people. But notice, this isn't the thing that you see. You don't see God has paid attention to my people. You see God has paid attention to his people. It's almost like she doesn't even consider herself one of his people. And now here's the thing. You've got three widows here. All of them are grieving. All of them are destitute. And all of them have nothing to rely on but each other. That's it. All they have is each other, nothing else. And I want to look at their stories, and I want to see how they responded in the midst of their grief. And I want to tell you that these ladies are grieving, but I think you're going to see some things in their life that's going to help at times when you're just overwhelmed, when you're struggling, when midterms are coming up and you're going, "What am I going to do?" And finals are there for the college students and the high school students. When it seems like you've lost your job, which has happened to people in this last week. When you've got medical things that are going on, when there's all kinds of stresses going on, how do you respond in those moments? I'm going to tell you, grief is another ball altogether. I mean, it really is. But I think there's going to be some things, some lessons we can learn about these three ladies and their grief that can help you in any stressful situation, in any time that you feel overwhelmed, all right? So I want to look into these three stories, and I want to focus on their stories, and I want you to see how they responded with. Now, it's fitting. We're calling this the Journey of Naomi, this sermon series. So I want to start with Naomi's story. Now, here's the thing about Naomi. Naomi, in her grief, she is, at this moment, just in survival mode, right? You know, you ever been in survival mode? You know what I mean by survival mode? You're in one of those things where you've been hurt so much, you've been through so much pain, you're so stressed out, you're so overwhelmed by everything, that it's just easier to just shut yourself off to emotions, to shut yourself off to everything, and you're just surviving. Do you understand that condition? Because some of you do understand that condition, because you're in that condition right now. You're just surviving. You're just kind of getting by. You're doing whatever it takes just to protect yourself. So I want you to see here that Naomi, she hears about this in verse 6, that, hey, there's food back home. Okay, so you know what? She's lost her husband, and we talked last week about how they shouldn't have ever been over in Moab. These people were not very nice people. They had actually earlier had subjugated the people for 18 years into slavery. They had the god that they worshipped was Chemosh, who this god was a god that they would give human sacrifices to, a god that was just, yeah, it's not a good thing. It's not a good situation at all. And this is where Naomi had run to, where her family had run to for help, rather than trust in God. But now she goes, okay, God has visited his people again. God is there. God has shown up. So it's time for me to go back. But notice here for a minute, she's not driven by the spiritual need. She's driven by her physical need, because she's very much in survival mode. She's very much in just this, I've just got to do what it takes to survive, to get by. She hasn't learned her lesson from the past 10 years that she spent in Moab, and they had just planned on going for a short period of time, for a while. And now 10 years later, she still hasn't quite learned that lesson, and she's still by the physical things that's going on. Now, is it a good decision to go back home for her? It is. I'm going to say yes, absolutely. And I love what, thank you, Ezekiel. Appreciate that, buddy. It is the right decision. Good job, man. But here's the thing. I love what Warren Wiersbe said. He said, Naomi's decision was right, but her motive was wrong. He said she was still interested primarily in food, but not in the fellowship with God. You don't hear her confessing her sins and asking him to forgive her. She was returning, and I love this, he says, she was returning to her land, but not to her Lord. And now here's the interesting thing about Naomi. I mean, her motive might have been wrong. She might have just been in that survival mode where she's just doing what she can to get by, and she's going, I need food. What she really needs is this relationship with God to be restored, but she's not willing to go there yet. She's going to focus on the food. She wants to focus on that aspect at this point. But there's something else that's kind of wrong in the situation, too. It's not just her motive. But notice she didn't want her daughter-in-laws to go home with her. And here's the thing. You cannot read this book of Ruth without realizing how much she loves these two young ladies. These daughter-in-laws that she, notice she doesn't call them daughter-in-laws, she calls them daughters. They have become so much a part of her, and she is just so full of love for them. It's inspiring. It's wonderful. It's great. You could see it in the tears. Notice it talks about how they cried loudly when they thought they were saying goodbye to each other. I mean, this is a full-blown weepy snot ball fest going on, right? You know, they're all hugging each other and getting snot all over it. You ever just have you're crying so hard, you're hugging each other, and you don't know who's snot to who's, you know, you're just covered in all that? Y'all need to wake up out there. All right, are you there? You ever had those moments, right? This is what's going on here. And she's ended up this empty and brokenhearted widow in a foreign land who's just in survival mode, and she doesn't want that for these girls. She doesn't want that for these. And so you get the very first spoken words in the book of Ruth, which said that these are the very first spoken words. It says, each of you go back. Each of you go back. Go back home. Don't be with me anymore. In Naomi's mind, seriously, these two young ladies would be a whole lot better without her involved. In Naomi's mind, she thinks that they would be a whole lot better if they weren't attached to her anymore. Is that sad? Is that kind of heartbreaking? Because here's the thing, this is what survival mode does to you. Survival mode becomes, it's just about you. It's just about what you need to survive. It's about what you need to get by. Now, a lot of our kids, even young kids, we're talking like 8, 9-year-olds, they're in survival mode. They live their lives this way. Because some of them don't know when their next meal is going to come. They don't know when their next support is going to come. It's just not there, and they live their lives in survival mode. You know, I consider it this way, and I've described it this way before. If you walk out of your house this afternoon, it's about 2 in the afternoon, and you're going to walk out your front door, and you hear a little rustling in the bushes, you're going to think, oh, that's just a lizard. You know, car's going to drive by, you're going to go, oh, hey, wave at somebody. You go outside at 2 a.m., you hear a rustling in the bushes, and instantly you're heightened, right? You're going, what's in the bushes? There's a bear. I know it's a bear. It's got to be a bear. A car drives by, and you go, it's a serial killer. Here he comes. He's coming for me, right? We do that, don't we? Because there's something about 2 a.m. that's different than 2 p.m. Survival mode has you living at 2 a.m. all the time. And what happens is it numbs you and it drains you till you're just flat. You're just there. You're just surviving. And that's where Naomi is. That's where a lot of our foster kids are. That's where a whole lot of people live their lives, even young kids. Now, adults, we should know better than to live our lives that way. But even here, we see Naomi. She's been so beat up. She's been so bruised. She's been so hurt. Do to just get through today. And that's where she's focused. And so here, there's been a lot written about why she didn't want her daughter-in-laws to return. And I think part of it is truly, these are foreign women, and the Jewish people were very proud people. They even had a term for people that intermarried with other terms. They didn't even consider them Jewish anymore. They considered them Samaritans, right? Samaritan is half Jewish, half Gentile person. They truly had this idea that you don't mix with outsiders. And now these two daughter-in-laws that had married into her family, if they go back to Bethlehem, they're going to be outcasts. Their prospects of finding another husband are going to be pretty much impossible, pretty close to it anyway. And in that day and age when young ladies couldn't work for themselves, they couldn't take care of themselves, they needed to rely on someone else to do that, she's concerned about that. They're going to be outcasts. They're going to be impossible at finding a husband. They're probably going to end up as destitute and as empty and as homeless as she's going to be when she gets back home. And she doesn't want that for them. But I think there's more going on. You know, we shared this verse over in Deuteronomy 23 last week. Deuteronomy 23, verse 3 and verse 6 says that no Moabite may enter the Lord's assembly, None of their descendants, even to the 10th generation, may ever enter the Lord's assembly. Never pursue their welfare or the prosperity as long as you live. But honestly, when I look at Naomi and I think why she doesn't want her daughters around, the daughters-in-laws that she loves so dearly and loves so much, I think part of it, honestly, is they are visible reminders of the 10 years that she walked away from God, that she wasn't where she was supposed to be. And they are going to be that reminder of that. But it's more than just that, too. I think they're going to be a visible reminder to everybody else of what she did. They're walking examples of the mistakes that she made in her mind, I think. So I think even as much as she loves them, she's afraid to bring them back home because she's going to feel ashamed of what she's done. Not ashamed of them, but ashamed of what she's done. And so I think this is part of what's going on here. I think this is just this thing that she's struggling with here. But she's so much in survival mode that she can't focus on anything else. And sadly, this is the thing that I find the most heartbreaking in this entire thing, and it's found in verse 15. Did you see there in verse 15 when Orpah actually leaves and Ruth refuses to, Naomi actually says, look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people, and notice what else it says, and to her gods. Follow your sister-in-law. Naomi, at this point, expects so little of God, so little that God's just not going to do anything for her. And he's probably going to do even less for them. That's her view of what God is. So much so that she's willing to send him back to go worship Chemosh, the god that is the quote god that's demanding your kids be sacrificed to him. That she's willing to send him back to that because it's about survival mode. It's about just taking the next step. It's just about getting through today, and that's it. But here's the thing, though, that she does something a little bit unexpected. I don't want to just badmouth Naomi because she's pretty amazing. She really is. Even in this survival state, and even in this pretty messed up mental state she's in, notice what she does. She actually gives him a blessing. Look at this. Let's put this up here. It says verses 8 and 9, each of you go back to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to the dead and to me. Notice, may the Lord show kindness to you the way you showed it to my sons, the way you showed it to me. It says, may the Lord grant each of you rest in the house of a new husband. And she kissed them and they wept loudly. So notice here, she actually gives them this little blessing that the Lord would show kindness to them. Also that the Lord would grant them rest in a new husband, that they'd be able to find love, that they'd be able to find someone who they belonged with, they'd be able to find all that. It's pretty touching, really. I mean, truly, it is. And I think that Naomi's point here, she's trying to return them geographically back home, but I think she's trying to release them emotionally. I think she's trying to let them know, hey, she's going to be okay, and they can be okay. They just have to go back home and not be with her anymore. So she kisses him, and they all three start weeping and crying and hugging, and I just cannot imagine what kind of emotions they're all going through. And you get to verse 10, and Orpah and Ruth both flat out refuse. They said, we insist on returning with you to your people. I love that picture. These girls love Naomi as much as she loves them. They haven't been together but a few years. They haven't known each other but a few years. But these girls saw something in Naomi, and Naomi saw something in these girls, and they are tight, and they love each other so much. So much so that they go, we insist, we're coming with you. We're not going back to our own homes. We're not going back to our own families. You are that home. You are that family. You are where we want to be. It's pretty amazing, and it's a real testimony to the person that Naomi was, at least at one point, and she's going to get back there again. But she's not totally lost it. She's not totally gone off. She does give him this blessing, and it's really touching, and it's pretty amazing to see. But let's leave Naomi's story for a minute, and I want to talk about Orpah's story. Because Orpah, she's a little bit different, because Naomi is about to play her. Because where you see in verse 10, is you see both of them going, no, we insist on going with you. So Naomi's going to pull out some tricks to get Orpah to go home. And here's what she's going to appeal to get Orpah to go home. She's going to appeal to Orpah's sense of desire for normalcy, right? Y'all, in 2020, how many of you hate the phrase new normal? Oh, we hate that phrase this year, don't we? If I hear one more person say, we just have to find our new normal, I'm going to, grab their nose hairs and pluck it out, right? You know, most painful thing I can think of that doesn't cause too much harm, right? I don't know where that came from, y'all. I'm sorry. I've either had not enough coffee this morning or too much coffee this morning, right? But here's what I want you to catch for a minute. In verses 11 through 13, you're going to see Naomi appeal to this idea. Look, you can be normal. You can have your sense of normalcy back. You can have that normality that we all so desire and so crave. Let's look at verses 11 through 13. It says this. Here's what Naomi says. They flat out say, we insist on going with you. So here's what Naomi replies. Return home, my daughters. Why do you want to go with me? Am I able to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. Go on, for I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me to have a husband tonight and to bear sons, would you be willing to wait for them to grow up? Would you restrain yourselves from remarrying? No, my daughters, my life is much too bitter for you to share because the Lord's hand has turned against me. And then again, verse 14, again they wept loudly, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. So here's Orpah's story, because I think what happens here, Naomi's about to give an argument that Orpah just can't argue against, that she just can't go. She's like, she's right. She just can't fight against that. She's really, the speech is designed in such a way, Naomi's trying to get Orpah to go, look, you can live a normal life. You can feel normal. You don't have to go feel like this outcast that's over there. But notice what she appeals to. First home, she says, return home, my daughters, right? Notice what she says, return home, right? They've already said, we're going with you, you're home. But now she's going, no, you need to return home. This appeal says that you have this sense of belonging, and it's over there. It's not here where I am, but it's over there. So return home. So much of grief is trying to find that new normal, and it's trying to just feel something. If you ever had those moments, and it's not even necessarily about grief, where you're going, God, I just want to feel something, right? You know, people that are kind of driven by anger, you know why they're driven by anger? Because anger is such a powerful emotion, and they usually don't feel much else, but they can feel anger, and they can recognize that. So they want that. They crave that. Because it's this idea of normal. Am I right, counselor? All right. But she's saying, look, return home. You belong there. You've got this place where you belong. And we all long for a place to belong. We all long for a place that feels like home. And she says, go on, for I'm too old to have another husband. Now notice here the implication that she's making. She's not going to be able to find, she's not going to be able to find someone who will help take care of her, but also take care of them. But there's also another implication in all this too, that she's too old to have more kids. She says this, even if I thought there was still hope for me to have a husband tonight, notice she does that, like, you know, notice how she's laying this out in extreme form. You can't even argue with it. Even if I found a husband tonight, it wouldn't be enough time. Notice she's laying on the logic thick, y'all. She really is. I mean, this is a masterful little speech. She says, even if I find a husband tonight and I'm able to bear sons, so she goes, even, first of all, the implication is I'm too old to have kids, but even if I do, would you be willing to wait for them to grow up? Because here's the way it worked. If you lost your husband, their family was supposed to take care of you. And now Naomi's going, I can't take care of you. I have no other sons. There's no one to take care of you. So what, are you going to just go along with me while I find a husband tonight, and then I go and get pregnant and have more sons, and then you wait until their marrying age and marry them in like 18 years, right? We look at that and we go, of course not. That's an idiotic plan. This very much, notice the logic that she's kind of doing to get Orpah to realize what she's committing to. So she does all this, and she lays all this out, and then she throws out the biggest argument at all. The biggest, most explicit argument that she could have laid out was there when she said, no, my daughters, my life is much too bitter for you to share. Why? Because the Lord's hand has turned against me. Guys, Naomi, boy, this poor lady, she truly sees herself as jinxed. She goes, we went to Moab to escape a famine. And as we talked last week, she traded a famine for three funerals. And she goes, man, God just doesn't want anything to do with me. I am jinxed, and I don't want you along for that. And sometimes it's kind of hard to argue with that. I think Orpah looked at all of this, and she goes, man, all that does sound good. If I go home, I could find a good Moabite man that I could get married to. That works. I could do that. There's not a Jewish man that's probably going to take a Moabite widow and marry her. Those pickings are slim, but Orpah here, she so much desires this sense of normality, so much the sense of hey, I can feel normal again. I this isn't the end, right? She's just living every day for the moment. She's just survival mode. She's just we're going to walk this day through, and we're going to walk this day through, and then we're just going to try and make it another day. But Orpah here, she's desiring normality. She's desiring just this sense of normal. And she has a better chance of finding that at home, and it takes Naomi's speech for her to realize that. Honestly, it's probably the wrong decision. It is. She should have gone with Naomi still. Even better than that, Naomi should have talked her into coming. But instead, the most heartbreaking part is she sends her home to her own god, Chemosh, and all of that kind of stuff, right? Orpah and Ruth could remarry and find happiness if they stayed in Moab, but they wouldn't find that in Bethlehem, which is the argument that Naomi makes. And Naomi's wrong, because Naomi is very much about trying to get Orpah to buy into that, and Orpah does. She desires that. But Ruth, let's look at her story. We know that she doesn't turn back. And incidentally, Orpah walked back, turns around, and goes home. And that's the last we hear of her in all of Scripture. I don't know what happens to her. I don't know the rest of her story. I wish I did. I would love to share it. But we don't know what happens. But we do know what happens with Ruth. And Ruth, actually, she moves forward and she trusts God, as you see in her response. Did you catch that here for a minute? Let's go back here and read this. Let's see, where are we at? Verse 15. Naomi said, "Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Follow your sister-in-law." But Ruth replied, "Don't plead with me to abandon you or to return and not follow you. Wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord punish me and do it severely if anything but death separates you and me." So you see that Orpah turns back, and I've just been so impressed through the years seeing him say this when we watch this video. It's a young man that says there's a difference between on and moving forward. And I love that statement. Think about that. There's a difference between moving on and moving forward. He said moving on implies that you've left something behind, right? That you're done with it. It's there, and now you've got a new chapter that you're doing. But moving forward is you take it along with you. It's helped form you into who you are, and it's helped make you into who you're going to be. And this is what Ruth is doing. She is moving forward, and she is trusting God in just this pretty incredible way, and she's emphatic. I mean, her speech. You think Naomi's speech is impressive? That's got nothing on Ruth's speech. It's got absolutely nothing on the speech that Ruth gives here. And Ruth is emphatic that she is going to. She is going to be with Naomi. Now, Orpah, I love this picture because Orpah wanted to be a wife again, but Ruth chose to remain a daughter. And this is the way I like to think of it this way, and it's pretty amazing. That emotional appeal and that rationale, she's gotten Orpah to turn back, but then she even starts, the rational appeal didn't work with Ruth, so then she lays on the emotional appeal. Well, look, Orpah went back, you should go follow her. But that doesn't get anywhere with Ruth. It doesn't get anywhere with her at all. And I love the fact that you think about this. You have three widows here, three grieving people. The only support they have is each other, right? Now, Naomi's going this way. Orpah's gone back and gone this way. Which one is Ruth going to choose? Now, I want you to think about this from her perspective, right? If you think about it, she really chose the support of a bitter and angry mother-in-law than to have the support of someone her own age who knows exactly what she's going through because she just lived through it as well, too. You kind of catch that here for a minute? She has two choices. I could go with this bitter, angry lady that's trying to get rid of me, or I could go with this girl that we've been through similar things and we understand each other and we've been there for each other. They probably knew each other growing up. They're from the same town, right? And what does Ruth choose? The bitter, angry lady. Y'all, that's amazing. That's awesome. That really is. It's pretty fascinating to think about, and she puts forth this amazing and emphatic speech that basically says three things. The first thing she said was, "Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you live, I will live." Notice this, "I'm going to be with you." It's about companionship. It's about relationship. I'm going to be there. If you're there, I'm there. If you're living there, I'm living there. Wherever you go, I'm going to go. Wherever you live, I'm going to live. It's about companionship. It's about doing life together. It's just this pledge that, hey, we're in this together. We're going to do this together. But she goes on. She says, "Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God." Notice that now this is about belonging, and it's not just about belonging. It's about identity. It's about how she sees herself. Ruth has gotten to know Naomi in such a way that she goes, "Hey, there's something about the way you've lived your life. There's something about you. There's something about your God that And I belong with you, and I'm going to identify myself with you and with your God. That is huge. Because it's not just, hey, I'm going to be here and I'm going to give you companionship. But it's about, I belong with you and I get my identity through you and through Jehovah, through the God that you serve. But then that third thing, man, if that wasn't strong enough, notice what else she says. Where you die, I will die. And there I am going to be buried, right? You think you're going to get rid of me? No, my grave's going to be right beside yours, Naomi. That's effectively what she said. Can you get that? Naomi goes, Ruth, I don't want you. Go home. And Ruth goes, nuh-uh, I'm going to be buried beside you, mother-in-law. But not in a bitter way like that. I mean, she's really, truly, this is a show of love. This is a show of incredible stuff. This is just that promise that it's cherishing Naomi, isn't it? She goes, Naomi, you have made such a difference in my life that wherever you die, even after you die, I want to stay in that town and I want to die and I want to be buried with you. You kind of catch that cherishing of Naomi that Ruth has here for a minute? And it's pretty amazing. And then she concludes it by saying, may the Lord punish me. Now all of a sudden, notice here in her talking, now it's not your God. This is verse 7. It's not your God, but it's the Lord. She goes, I'm with you now. My identity is wrapped up into God just like yours is. It's about God. It's about all that. And she goes, and may the Lord punish me and do so severely if anything but death separates you and me. How do you respond to a speech like that? This is what I love. Naomi's response. Did you look at verse 18. Here's how Naomi, the mother-in-law, responds to that. When Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped talking to her. Oh, that's so funny, y'all. She hears this incredible argument from Ruth that she goes, I can't argue with that. Okay. It just stops talking to her, right? There are no mother-in-law jokes that you can make about the book of Ruth, truly. But, you know, I want to make so bad about learning how to set up a mother-in-law, but, you know, it's not in the spirit of this whole thing for a minute. Naomi realizes it's a lost cause to get Ruth to turn home. The ironic part about all of this is that Ruth, the Moabitess, who she gets called that, I think about 12 times, roughly. My math may be off right now. I don't have it written down in front of me. Someone who's not one of the people, the chosen people, former worshiper of Chemosh, who displays levels of trust in God and levels of love that even Naomi doesn't have at this point. Did you catch the irony in that? That even though Naomi is returning to the land of her people and her God, but Ruth has more faith in the God of Israel than Naomi does herself. I gotta tell you, Naomi's faith is there. It really is. It's just hanging on by a thread at this point. She feels so beat up and she feels so torn up by life. She doesn't know how to respond to it. So instead, she's just going to go into survival mode and just go, all right, we're just going to do this and we're just going to do that. We're going to ignore anything we don't have to deal with. And we're only going to deal with what we have to deal with. The daughter-in-laws, oh, I love them so much, but I can't handle them. I don't know how to take care of them. They need to go away. They need to go back because she's in survival mode. Orpah here, who just wants that sense of normal. And y'all, that drives a lot of our behaviors a lot of times. It drives a lot of what we do because we want to feel that sense of normal, right? We want that sense of this is the way things are supposed to be. And in 2020, we have that in spades, don't we? We're like, I'm so tired of the way that this drive for normal, for normality, for normalcy, whichever word you want to use, that drive is so huge. So you've got Naomi, who's just in, she lets all the stresses that she's going through put her in survival mode. You've got Orpah, who just goes, I'm going to do whatever it takes just to feel normal again. But then you've got Ruth, this amazing, amazing young lady who goes, I'm going to take this and I'm going to let this mold me. I'm going to let this drive me closer to God. I'm going to let this mold me in a way that's going to strengthen me in a way that nothing else will. She is taking the next step in faith, and that is huge. Y'all, there's a lot of ways we respond to our stresses. There's a lot of ways we respond to grief. There's a lot of ways that we respond to those amazing things that we go through. I got to sit through a Life Connection class this morning that was a 45-minute
dealing with that right there. And it was far more effective than anything we just preached here. And I'll never forget what Donnie Seaton said. I really thought about changing the thought of the week to something Donnie said this morning. He said, God is the expert in crisis management. Isn't that an amazing thought? God is the expert in crisis management. Through this crisis, through everything that these three ladies have gone through, Ruth goes, I understand that God is the expert in crisis management, and I'm going to put my faith and I'm going to put my trust in him. She probably scared? Yeah. Unsure of what's to come? Yeah. Sad about leaving the only home she's ever known? Leaving her own family to go with this other family? Yeah. Absolutely. But she understood that God is the expert in crisis management. He's going to be the one that lets you take the next step forward and then the next step forward. She understands that he's the one that can give you that sense of normal that we desire so much. She understands that God is the one that can help heal those hurts, that God is the one that can help you survive and get you through this, that it's found in him and not in anything else. This foreign woman, a former worshiper of Chemosh, is now ministering to Naomi, like Naomi has ministered to her over the last few years. And it's a beautiful and incredible picture. I wish I knew how Orpah's story turned out. I really don't. I am glad we know how Naomi's story turns out, and I am glad we know how Ruth's story turns out. We're going to pick this up next week as they kind of get back home. They get back to where that land is, and you'll continue to see Naomi not in so much of a good place next week, and as she's still struggling, as she's still just torn up over everything she's gone through. She's still in survival mode next week. I'm going to tell you, she's still there. But the way that God works in her life, and he's been there all along, is amazing. He's there behind the scenes, even when she can't see it. And you should know that God is there behind the scenes, even when you can't see him. He's still working. He's still there. He still loves you. He still cares. He is still your biggest fan, and he is still your biggest cheerleader who is rooting for you. Put your faith and your trust in him. Let him get you through. Let's pray. God, thank you for these three testimonies. Thank you for these three incredible women who went through heartache. They went through just the emotional ripping of losing their spouse and then losing so many family members in a short period of time. Lord, help us to respond appropriately. Help us to realize that you are there. Even when we're mad at you, even when we're angry at you for everything that's happened, that you are still there. Help us to realize that you are the God who is sovereign over everything in life, and you love us so much, and you are concerned about everything in our lives. Thank you for loving us so, so much. Especially to the point of even offering Jesus as a sacrifice for our sins. We could never be good enough. We could never be strong enough. We could never be the people that we should be. And you did all the work for us, and we are so grateful for that. Thank you for Jesus. Thank you for the cross. Thank you for the resurrection. We pray as we go through this week that you will be the thing that gets us through. You will be the thing that gives us a reason to wake up in the morning and a reason to go to sleep at night. That every minute of the day that we live is going to be wrapped up in grace, and it's going to be wrapped up in you. It's going to be wrapped up in recognizing that you're right here with us every minute of every day. Be with us. For it's your name we pray. Amen.